Chapter 92. In the cottage, Adam did not ask Dinah to take his arm when they got out into the lane. He had never yet done so, often as they had walked together, for he had observed that she never walked arm in arm with Seth, and he thought, perhaps, that kind of support was not agreeable to her. So they walked apart, though side by side, and the close poke of her little black bonnet hid her face from him. "You can't be happy, then, to make the Hall Farm your home, Dinah?" Adam said, with the quiet interest of a brother who has no anxiety for himself in the matter. "'Tis a pity, seeing they're so fond of you. You know, Adam, my heart is as their heart, so far as love for them and care for their welfare goes, but they are in no present need. Their sorrows are healed, and I feel that I am called back to my old work, in which I found a blessing that I have missed of late in the midst of too abundant worldly good. I know it is a vain thought to flee from the work that God appoints us for the sake of finding a greater blessing to our own souls, as if we could choose for ourselves where we shall find the fullness of the divine presence, instead of seeking it where alone it is to be found, in loving obedience. But now, I believe, I have a clear showing that my work lies elsewhere at least for a time. In the years to come, if my aunt's health should fail, or she should otherwise need me, I shall return." "You know best, Dinah," said Adam. "Don't believe you'd go against the wishes of them that love you, and are akin to you, without a good and sufficient reason in your own conscience. I've no right to say anything about my being sorry. You know well enough what cause I have to put you above every other friend I've got. And if it had been ordered so that you could hop in my sister and live with us all our lives, I should have counted it the greatest blessing as could happen to us now. But Seth tells me there's no hope o' that. Your feelings are different, and perhaps I'm taking too much upon me to speak about it." Dinah made no answer, and they walked on in silence for some yards, till they came to the stone stile, where, as Adam had passed through first, and turned round to give her his hand, while she mounted the unusually high step, she could not prevent him from seeing her face. It struck him with surprise, for the gray eyes, usually so mild and grave, had the bright uneasy glance which accompanies suppressed agitation, and the slight flush in her cheeks, with which as he had come downstairs, was heightened to a deep rose color. She looked as if she were only sister to Dinah. Adam was silent with surprise and conjecture for some moments, and then he said, "I hope I've not hurt or displeased you by what I've said, Dinah. Perhaps I was making too free. I've no wish different from what you see to be best, and I'm satisfied for you to live 30 miles off, if you think it right. I shall think of you just as much as I do now, for you're bound up with what I can no more help remembering than I can help my heart beating." Poor Adam! Thus do men blunder. Dinah made no answer, but she presently said, "Have you heard any news from that poor young man, since we last spoke of him?" Dinah always called Arthur so, as he had never lost the image of him as he had seen him in the prison. "Yes," said Adam. "Mr. Irwin read me part of a letter from him yesterday. It's pretty certain, they say, that there'll be a peace soon, though nobody believes it'll last long, but he says he doesn't mean to come home. He's no heart for it yet, and it's better for others that he should keep away. Mr. Irwin thinks he's in the right not to come. It's a sorrowful letter. He asks about you and the Poysers, as he always does. There's one thing in the letter cut me a good deal. You can't think what an old fellow I feel, apostrophe he says. I make no schemes now. I'm the best when I've a good day's march or fighting before me. Apostrophe, he's of a rash, warm-hearted nature, like Essa, for whom I have always felt great pity," said Dinah. "Hat meeting between the brothers, where Essa is so loving and generous, and Jacob so timid and distrustful, notwithstanding his sense of the divine favor, has always touched me greatly. Truly, I have been tempted sometimes to say that Jacob was of a mean spirit. But that is our trial. We must learn to see the good in the midst of much that is unlovely." Ah, said Adam, I like to read about Moses best in the Old Testament. He carried a hard business well through, and died when other folks were going to reap the fruits. A man must have courage to look at his life so, and think what'll come of it after he's dead and gone. A good solid bit of work lasts. If it's only laying a floor down, somebody's the better for it being done well, besides the man as does it. They were both glad to talk of subjects that were not personal, and in this way they went until they passed the bridge across the Willow Brook, when Adam turned round and said, Ah, here's Seth. I thought he'd be home soon. Does he know of your going, Dinah? Yes, I told him last Sabbath. Adam remembered now that Seth had come home much depressed on Sunday evening, a circumstance which had been very unusual with him of late, for the happiness he had in seeing Dinah every week seemed long to have outweighed the pain of knowing she would never marry him. This evening he had his habitual air of dreamy benignant contentment, until he came quite close to Dinah, and saw the traces of tears on her delicate eyelids and eyelashes. He gave one rapid glance at his brother, but Adam was evidently quite outside the current of emotion that had shaken Dinah. He wore his everyday look of unexpectant calm. Seth tried not to let Dinah see that he had noticed her face, and only said, I'm thankful you're come, Dinah, for Mother's been hungering after the sight of you all day. She began to talk of you the first thing in the morning. When they entered the cottage, Lisbeth was seated in her armchair, too tired with setting out the evening meal, a task she always performed a long time beforehand, to go and meet them at the door as usual, when she heard the approaching footsteps. Coom, child, feet coom at last, she said, when Dinah went towards her. Hat dust main by laven me a week and never coom a nigh me? Dear friend, said Dinah, taking her hand, you're not well. If I'd known it sooner, I'd have come. And how's he to know, if he doesna coom? Th lads on you know what I tell him. As long as he can stir hand and foot, the men think he are hearty. But I'm none so bad, on a bit of a cold sets me aching. And th lads tease me, so th somebody why me th do the work they make me ache worse why talking. If feet's come and stay why me, they'd let me alone. The poisers canna want thee so bad as I do. But take thy bonnet off and let me look at thee. Dinah was moving away, but Lisbeth held her fast while she was taking off her bonnet and looked at her face as one looks into a newly gathered snowdrop to renew the old impressions of purity and gentleness. What's the matter, Wiley? Said Lisbeth in astonishment. Feast been a crying. It's only a grief that'll pass away, said Dinah, who did not wish just now to call forth Lisbeth's remonstrances by disclosing her intention to leave Hayslip. Who shall know about it shortly? We'll talk of it tonight. I shall stay with you tonight. Lisbeth was pacified by this prospect, and as he had the whole evening to talk with Dinah alone, for there was a new room in the cottage, you remember, built nearly 2 years ago, in the expectation of a new inmate, and here Adam always sat when he had writing to do or plans to make. Seth sat there too this evening, for he knew his mother would like to have Dinah all to herself. There were two pretty pictures on the two sides of the wall in the cottage. On one side there was the broad-shouldered, large-featured, hardy old woman, in her blue jacket and buff kerchief, with her dim-eyed anxious looks turned continually on the lily face, and the slight form in the black dress that were either moving lightly about in helpful activity, or seated close by the old woman's armchair, holding her withered hand, with eyes lifted up towards her to speak a language which Lisbeth understood far better than the Bible or the hymn book. She would scarcely listen to reading at all tonight. Eh, nay, shut the book, she said. We mun talk. I want thee know what thee was crying about. Hast got troubles o' thy own, like other folks? On the other side of the wall there were the two brothers so like each other in the midst of their unlikeness. Adam with knit brows, shaggy hair, and dark vigorous color, absorbed in his eye-gearing. Seth, with large rugged features, a close copy of his brothers, but with thin, wavy, brown hair and blue dreamy eyes, as often as not looking vaguely out of the window instead of at his book, although it was a newly bought book, Wesley's abridgment of Madame Guyon's life, which was full of wonder and interest for him. Seth had said to Adam, "Can I help thee with anything in here tonight? I don't want to make a noise in the shop." "No, lad," Adam answered, "there's nothing but what I must do myself. Thee's got thy new book to read." And often, when Seth was quite unconscious, Adam, as he paused, after drawing a line with his ruler, looked at his brother with a kind smile dawning in his eyes. He knew H. Ladd liked to sit full o' thoughts he could give no account of. They'd never come to anything, but they made him happy, and in the last year or so, Adam had been getting more and more indulgent to Seth. It was part of that growing tenderness which came from the sorrow at work within him. For Adam, though you see him quite master of himself, working hard and delighting in his work after his inborn inalienable nature, had not outlived his sorrow, had not felt it slip from him as a temporary burden, and leave him the same man again. Do any of us? God forbid. It would be a poor result of all our anguish and our wrestling, if we won nothing but our old selves at the end of it, if we could return to the same blind loves, the same self-confident blame, the same light thoughts of human suffering, the same frivolous gossip over blighted human lives, the same feeble sense of that unknown towards which we have sent forth irrepressible cries in our loneliness. Let us rather be thankful that our sorrow lives in us as an indestructible force, only changing its form, as forces do, and passing from pain into sympathy, the one poor word which includes all our best insight and our best love. Not that this transformation of pain into sympathy had completely taken place in Adam yet. There was still a great remnant of pain, and this, he felt, would subsist as long as her pain was not a memory, but an existing thing, which he must think of as renewed with the light of every new morning. But we get accustomed to mental as well as bodily pain, without, for all that, losing our sensibility to it. It becomes a habit of our lives, and we cease to imagine a condition of perfect ease as possible for us. Desire is chastened into submission, and we are contented with our day, when we have been able to bear our grief in silence, and act as if we were not suffering. For it is at such periods, that the sense of our lives, having visible and invisible relations, beyond any of which either our present, or prospective self is the center, grows like a muscle, that we are obliged to lean on and exert. That was Adam's state of mind in this second autumn of his sorrow. His work, as you know, had always been part of his religion, and from very early days he saw clearly that good carpentry was God's will, was that form of God's will that most immediately concerned him. But now there was no margin of dreams for him beyond this daylight reality, no holiday time in the working day world, no moment in the distance, when duty would take off her iron glove and breastplate, and clasp him gently into rest. He conceived no picture of the future, but one made up of hard working days such as he lived through, with growing contentment and intensity of interest, every fresh week. Love, he thought, could never be anything to him, but a living memory, a limb lopped off, but not gone from consciousness. He did not know that the power of loving was all the while gaining new force within him, that the new sensibilities bought by a deep experience were so many new fibers by which it was possible, nay, necessary to him, that his nature should intertwine with another. Yet he was aware that common affection and friendship were more precious to him than they used to be, that he clung more to his mother and Seth, and had an unspeakable satisfaction in the sight or imagination of any small addition to their happiness. The Poysers, too, hardly 3 or 4 days passed, but he felt the need of seeing them, and interchanging words and looks of friendliness with them. He would have felt this, probably, even if Dinah had not been with them, but he had only said the simplest truth in telling Dinah that he put her above all other friends in the world. Could anything be more natural? For in the darkest moments of memory the thought of her always came as the first ray of returning comfort. The early days of gloom at the Hall Farm had been gradually turned into soft moonlight by her presence, and in the cottage too, for S.E. had come at every spare moment to soothe and cheer poor Lisbeth, who had been stricken with a fear that subdued even her querulousness at the sight of her darling Adam's grief-worn face. He had become used to watching her light, quiet movements, her pretty loving ways to the children, when he went to the Hall Farm, to listen for her voice as for a recurrent music, to think everything she said and did was just right, and could not have been better. In spite of his wisdom, he could not find fault with her for her overindulgence of the children, who had managed to convert Dinah the preacher, before whom a circle of rough men had often trembled a little, into a convenient household slave, though Dinah herself was rather ashamed of this weakness, and had some inward conflict as to her departure from the precepts of Solomon. Yes, there was one thing that might have been better. She might have loved Seth and consented to marry him. He felt a little vexed, for his brother's sake, and he could not help thinking regretfully how Dinah, as Seth's wife, would have made their home as happy as it could be for them all, how she was the one being that would have soothed their mother's last days into peacefulness and rest. "It's wonderful she doesn't love T.H. Ladd," Adam had said sometimes to himself. "For anybody I'd think he was just cut out for her. But her heart's so taken up with other things. She's one of those women that feel no drawing towards having a husband and children of their own. She thinks she should be filled up with her own life then, and she's been used so to living in other folks' cares, she can't bear the thought of her heart being shut up from 'em. I see how it is, well enough. She's cut out of different stuff from most women. I saw that long ago. She's never easy, but when she's helping somebody, and marriage would interfere with her ways, that's true. I've no right to be contriving, and thinking it would be better if she'd have Seth, as if I was wiser than she is, or than God either, for he made her what she is, and that's one of the greatest blessings I've ever had from his hands, and others besides me." This self-reproof had recurred strongly to Adam's mind, when he gathered from Dinah's face that he had wounded her by referring to his wish that as he had accepted Seth, and so he had endeavored to put into the strongest words his confidence in her decision as right as resignation even to her going away from them, and ceasing to make part of their life otherwise than by living in their thoughts, if that separation were chosen by herself. He felt sure she knew quite well enough how much he cared to see her continually, to talk to her with the silent consciousness of a mutual great remembrance. It was not possible she should hear anything but self-renouncing affection and respect in his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.